Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Now, speaking of imali, President Cyril Ramaphosa had a Q&A session in Parliament yesterday. And he actually spoke about, I suppose, an economic concept, which is a multiplier effect. He spoke about some of the things that are holding back the South African economy. And I was going to play this full clip, but it's 4 minutes long. So I'll rather just explain some of the things that he said.
First things first.
So generally speaking, economics, if I've got 10 rand and I go and I buy fruits from Mpo with that 10 rand, Mpo then takes that 10 rand and she goes and she buys stock from Saul for 8 rand. Saul takes that 8 rand and he goes and he buys manure from Fundo for 6 rand. Fundo takes that 6 rand and she goes and she buys clothes for her kids for 4 rand. That's called the multiplier effect. And the more that 10 rand circulates, which started off with me, the more everybody benefits. Because do you see now that all of us have eaten because basically that money kept circulating. However, if I take the 10 rand and I save 9 rand, then I just go buy Mpo for 1 rand. Then Mpo takes the 1 rand, then that's that. Do you see that there's less circulation there?
Yeah.
It's called the paradox of saving. When people save, the economy actually doesn't grow. It's funny, but I know.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive. And so this is the problem with South Africa's economy. The money is in the hands of the few, whereas the money should be in the hands of the many. And the reason why that is because, well, structural issues, because people obviously were hoarding wealth back in the day because of apartheid laws, etc., and so on. Now, you may ask yourself, what difference does it make if the money is in the hands of the few? Well, the consumption curve goes and it plateaus at some point. So here's another example. If Mpo was earning 100 rand a month and her living expenses were like maybe even 100 rand a month, literally she blows a full 100 when she gets it. If I were to double her pay, now she earns 200 rand a month, she's not going to keep her living expenses just 100 rand.
No.
Her living expenses are going to go up maybe to maybe even 190, sometimes 200 again.
Or 300 if you are not living on debt.
Right? Then I double her money again. Now she earns 400 rand a month. Living expenses will go up, but at some point they won't go up by much, right? If I go and I give them for 1 million rand, now there's no way she can spend 1 million rand every month. There's just no way. Because
you're
at some point, no.
You haven't seen I blew it.
Nah, this, let me tell you. So the things that you spend 1 million rand on, maybe you say, okay, I'm going to buy a car. You buy it this month. Next month, pa, another 1 million. What are you going to do now? Get another car? Okay, you go get a house. Next month, pa, another 1 million. Eventually, you just can't keep up with that.
It's sensible, yeah.
Yes, and that's exactly what happens with super rich individuals. They just earn way more money than they spend. And so the rest of your money goes where? Into savings. Because savings is one minus consumption. So whatever you don't consume, that's what you save. And this is what President Cyril Ramaphosa was trying to explain yesterday. Now, he went on to say that there's a certain pride that black people have and take in knowing that some of the means of production are owned by black people, right? And that's what I need us to discuss today. Because do you care who owns an economy as long as the economy benefits you? So in other words, there is another way that this economy could be structured. And it'll be a communist economy where the government owns the means of production, but everybody has equal access and opportunity to it. So there you couldn't say the economy is black owned or white owned, etc. But everybody, whether black or white, would have equal access to it.
I think it does matter because if you're living on a continent that is predominantly black, why is it that the economy is not in our hands, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, having said that, I do, it almost comes back to the conversation that is had every once in a while. Township economy. Yeah. Why is it that when we have so many people concentrated in a particular space, the money keeps flowing out of the township? Mm-hmm. Why is it that we're not teaching our kids to support black businesses? Why is it that we're not making it cool to, you know, buy black, so to speak? So I think it, for me personally, it does matter. If I do find a black designer, for instance, that I really like, those are the ones I like to support. If I find an up and coming youngster who is doing something in a particular field that I like, I will try and support them. So for me, it does matter.
Now, it's interesting that you bring that up, because we have this discussion even anecdotally, where people will say, you know, I try to support black business, but then the quality of service I get is not satisfactory.
Mm.
At that point, I then take the assumption that people actually don't care who owns a business. What they care about are the deliverables. Bundo?
We do care. In as much as it's unfortunate that at times you would say maybe the service you receive, maybe at a black-owned business, might be not up to standard, but it does matter. And it takes me to Mpo's point again of the township economy. She said, why is it that we see most of the money going out? It starts with the lack of political will. If you've got politicians that firstly allow retailers, big retailers, to come into the community, you are killing the township economy. Because if you've had supermarkets that were owned by black people, you've had all sorts of businesses, liquor stores that were owned by black people in the township. They actually took us to school in just owning those businesses in the township. Mm. And then when you bring a big retailer that will have discounts for liquor and all sorts of things, how is that bottle store supposed to survive? But what you could do is that you could just somehow recapitalize most of these businesses, give them assistance, and then they become bigger as the retails, the big retailers, pardon me. So for us in the suburbs, we'll continue to go to our big retailers, but empower the black businesses in the townships to become the big retailers there. Mm. But it doesn't happen. Mm. It's easy for most of these big retailers that we buy from to now go into the township and kill that economy.
Mm.
What if I told you it's not possible to empower the Gassi entrepreneur to be as big as that retailer?
Why not?
Why?
Because of capital. So let me explain. Some of the things that lead to a person being able to give you discounts are economies of scale, the fact that they buy in bulk, etc. and so on. They've got multiple stores and outlets. The logistics cost, for example, get lowered because they deliver to hundreds of stores daily. You, with your one store, doesn't matter how much money I give you, you will never be able to get the kind of discounts that a Pick and Pay will get. You'll never be able to get the kind of discounts that a ShopRite will get. And so your price point will always be higher. Now, the question is, do the people that end up buying from you care that your price point is higher, that a premium that they need to pay for the shop being black owned?
I get what you're saying, but I feel like the Pakistanis in the townships have shown us that if you come together and become a conglomerate, then you can go out today and buy in bulk and be able to bring down the prices. Yes, there's the matter of illegal goods, but put that aside. If you come together as the township economy and say, we are spaza shop owners, there's 50 of us, we're all going to come together, go to a macro and go, you can't tell me you can't get goods cheaper if you're going there together as a collective.
There's one industry that's black owned. And take advantage. They are collective, right?
Yes.
But even them, their bargaining power is very limited. Look at taxis interest rates. Higher than everybody else. In the 20s and higher, right? Taxis don't get preferential fuel levies. Taxis don't get even a break in tax. Sorry, in tolls, e-tolls. They don't get any of that. And they solely control the industry.
Have they tried to?
No, and that's what I was getting to. It's that in as much as it's organized, I've been there, I've sat in many of those meetings before with my own grandmother.
Mm.
There was no element of wanting to go beyond just that. Yeah. All they wanted to do is discuss the routes. There's the long distance, there's our local. Mm. So every time they had young people join the organization or perhaps representing their parents, it was something nice for them because they thought young people would bring some more innovative ideas for them on how to organize themselves. Very powerful industry, but the ideas might be lacking because abantu abadala in most instances.
And they buy individually. It's not like they all pool. Right now, they should actually have a bank. You know, it's not like they pull the money and then go to Toyota and say, we're going to buy 5,000 taxis this year. Yeah. Then you can see these discounts and all these things. But it's all individuals, but they're united almost symbolically, not in practice.
So give us a shout. Let us know what your thoughts are. Is it possible for the economy of South Africa to then shift? And would that benefit the consumer at the end of the day? How do you see it working?
It's easy for outsiders to kill economies, robotaki, because black people do not inherently want to see other black people succeed. I think this comes from the black consciousness movement being stifled in its prime. Any black business that you know of that is either failing or going to fail, the first people who celebrate black people, our mindset must change.
You know, Mokas, they like to say, that is why it's a supportive business, Mokas, unquote. That thing, you know, it's one of the things which makes our black business not to grow, because you only give them one chance, and then after that, you move to a white establishment. And until we change the mentality, we'll forever be stagnant as black business.
Yeah, so there's a tweet here from Muntless Ganga. And he says, umuntu umuntu ngabantu, right? It's just rhetoric because it's a psychology of the people that hasn't been healed from apartheid thinking. Hence, Somalis and Pakistanis are taking over the spaza sector. On average, we're still in apartheid mentality. Now, funny enough, this guy, he's from KZN. Our families have a political history. We know each other. And he can tell you, back in KZN, I can speak for KZN, I can't speak for any other township, but I've read similar things. In KZN, being a business owner in the 80s and 70s was dangerous. Because as soon as your business was thriving, you'd get shot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same with taxis.
You see?
Yeah. Once you start having one too many taxis, you become a target.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, sport, I am Mpoma Boy. Quickly, but when it comes to this topic that we're discussing, sometimes when we talk about financial liberation and so on and so forth, especially amongst black people, people always say it's apartheid. Do we still blame apartheid?
Definitely. Without a doubt. You see, the source of inequality is a risk. A huge risk and continues to be so.
Mm-hmm.
That thing we're talking about people getting assassinated when they start to be affluent in society.
Yeah.
It's because of inequality. Now, what's the cause of inequality in our country? Apartheid.
True, but at what point do we, as the so-called new generation, turn things around for ourselves and try and make sure that we better not only our lives, but the future's lives?
Okay, so let me just say, if you and I were racing, it's 100 meters, and you trip me and I fall, and I get up and I still race, and maybe I catch up and maybe even beat you.
Yeah.
It doesn't negate the fact that you trip me and I fell. You still trip me and I fell. Even if I win, I can still be like, Mpo, you trip me and I fell.
But I continued running.
Yes, but you trip me and I fell. You can't tell me, sister, don't bring that up. It happened. You tripped me and I fell. And in fact, if you hadn't tripped me, I would have beaten you by a lot bigger.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I do think the economy can change, yes, but only if preference is given to the locals. For instance, like I see, we've got tuck shops that are owned by foreign nationals. How is it that they got into this country? And they own, like, uzuthola ukuthi in one street, there's like 2-3 spaza shops, and they're making money, all three of them. None of them is not making a profit. Now, the question is, how is it that these people landed here? So can we not close all these Pakistani shops and then allow the locals to be the ones that are running the spaza shops? Because wow, it's one day, Nyanchela, one day sizovuka thina si minority in our own country.
I also want to mention something, right? Entrepreneurship is a skill. Not everybody can be an entrepreneur. That's not to say that people can't be. It's not to say that black people are not good entrepreneurs. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying it's a skill. And that skill you learn and you hone over time. You can give two people the same resources and the same market. One will perform better than the other because the other one is just more skilled than the other. We need to keep that in mind too.
Panagitisizwe, the biggest problem thina singabantu abamnyama that we facing kuze singasiphumelele ukuthi singabantu abamnyama azwani, we are too divided, ethnicities, umona. I think we should fix our mindset qala and then we can say we can have a black economy, because singabantu abamnyama azwani. Masibona umuntu ophumelele sifuna ukumgcinezela thina futhi bantu. I think inkinga esina thina abantu abamnyama.
The biggest problem of black businesses is black people. Even the business owners, I mean, somebody says, I am selling 123, inbox me for prices. Why am I inboxing you for prices? If you're selling something, you post it out there and you said the price is this. And the other thing is the fact that we associate black businesses as substandard stuff. I don't know why that is. I don't know. And they don't make it easy because they also take advantage, Yoguti, because it's a fellow black person. I don't have to go above and beyond, you know, what I'm supposed to do. You hear these stories all the time where this was not delivered, the photographer didn't come, this did not happen. And this is why people end up going to white businesses, because they think because it's white, they're going to get better service. I think as black people, we need to do better. We have to do better, guys.
I'm going to give you two examples, Mubulawa, of another group of people who generally get associated with substandard products. The Chinese, for example. People go, yo, China Molly, substandard product.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Pakistanis that we just mentioned now, right? They get associated with substandard products. But somehow they still find a way to make the business work and thrive. Why is that? Well, it's because they've realized that price point is more important than quality in a country like ours. The same reason why Pep stores do so well. Because their price point is a lot better. Never mind the fact that the t-shirt may not last as long as an Edgar's t-shirt, but the price point is important. Which further highlights the points I was making earlier, that you need economies of scale in order to deliver a lower price point.
Hey, welcome. It does matter. The biggest problem is that we are impatient and we are not willing to support and coach our local black businesses. Mongapere in economic yama Jews, they were patient with each other. About no matter when you get a bad service, you would still go there, but then coach and advise that person who would know. Work on your service up until by improve our right. Tina Mandaba Mnyama were so impatient with each other. Economics were not built in one day.
Hey guys, it's like you've hit a nerve here. I am someone, me and my wife are someone who's been very unapologetically black. I think we've supported black businesses throughout in order to try and bring that transformation in terms of the economy or activeness of the economy. But we've recently been burnt. I think we've had a string of poor suppliers. We hosted a major event. The suppliers have just been, something else. No communication, disappearing, no accountability. It has really got me questioning myself now. I think, especially when you spend a lot of money that you saved for a while, so you end up just going for the best service. And honestly, as much as we want to continue being pro-black, I think for some events, we might just go for the best quality of service.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.